You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves, as well as Golden Goal Press. We've got a good but probably very brief show for you tonight. I am currently with the day job in the middle of nowhere, Ontario, up north of the destroyed wall in Canada. My good friend Daniel Sperry, how goes Kansas City on this Tuesday evening?
Not as stormy as last night. Last night was crazy. We had a few lightning strikes that on my like weather app last night showed up at 0 miles away, and like sounded like absolute like complete bombs going off, and my dog was barking at the windows. It was a little fun, but it's a little bit calmer today. But yeah, dude, it's going good. It's springtime.
Good stuff. It is just over 55 degrees here in Canada. A little bit rainy today, but the sun did end up coming out, so that's really, really nice. And summer is not quite fully here in Denver. I'm anticipating like maybe one more, like 2 to 3 days worth of snow. I'm still overcoming my cold, if you can tell my voice being a little bit off. Dear listeners, is one final screw you from, I don't know if it's Mother Winter. Is there a god of winter, Dan? Does that exist somewhere in North mythology or Greek mythology or something?
I mean, the closest thing I could think of was just the Night King or whatever. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, okay.
Game of Thrones, but.
Okay, yeah, so the Night King, you know, I guess is sending me a cold as opposed to, you know, wiping out man, which is a nice alternative given the last couple of weeks that he's had. But in any case, Dan, let's get into it, and we'll start with the breaking news of the day. We're coming to you on Tuesday, May 7th, 2019, and Alan Koch is no longer the head coach of MLS expansion site FC Cincinnati, Dan. He is just the second coach of the calendar year to be fired by an MLS team. Previously, Anthony Hudson. Go back a couple shows, listeners, if you want my and Dan's take on what was going on there in Commerce City, Colorado. The club released a press release, and they had some statements in that press release today, Dan, saying that this was not a function of the recent results. FC Cincinnati obviously on a really, really poor run of form. They had two losses and a double game week last week that included a 1-0 loss to San Jose Earthquakes that had Quakes Twitter trolling FC Cincinnati pretty hard that I thought was funny. I don't know about you, Dan. And Alan Koch came out and said, you know, we can't buy a goal right now. And some people kind of related some of Koch's either criticisms to the team or defending of his approach as far as personnel decisions and style of play, you know, akin to maybe some of the things that we saw from Anthony Hudson in, you know, what was ultimately his final few press conferences with the Colorado Rapids. And FC Cincinnati came out and said that it wasn't the current results. It wasn't because they lost two games last week or because they're below, you know, the red line right now. Not that FC Cincinnati was expecting to make the playoffs in 2019, but it was wanting to get back to a club identity, to a club culture, and being really healthy. You kind of saw some of the players the last couple weeks, Dan, kind of dance around the idea of just issues going on with the team. Probably subtweeting Alan Koch, maybe not entirely throwing him under the bus. This is a weird situation. I think maybe culturally it's a good decision for Cincinnati, but I feel like there has to be something else that went on here behind the scenes that everybody's just choosing to keep in-house right now. Your thoughts on what happened and where the heck FCC goes from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, there's a couple ways to look at it. One, I don't think all the personnel decisions are quite on Koch here. I think some of them are on the GM. And as we've as we alluded to with the Colorado Rapids, even this is kind of the way things go when it comes to that. So the manager will get the boot first, and then, you know, sooner or later, if it is the roster that isn't yielding results, then it's going to be the GM. Birding's job so far. I mean, he doesn't have much of a soccer background, if any, prior to his affiliation with FC Cincinnati. So to be making soccer decisions, I still question them a little bit. Look at the roster, I question them. Question is also, how much did Alan Koch play in the player acquisition? I know he had to play some, but did he play enough? I do understand why, or if you're a GM and you're saying we can't buy a goal, your coach is saying we can't buy a goal, maybe alluding to that he's already called out the roster, the type of players that they have earlier along the way. All those things can be construed as taking shots at those who are in charge of roster construction and the things that he maybe doesn't have control of. But there's this team has no attackers. I mean, you saw it. They took off a forward, or they took off someone and put on somebody else in the San Jose. I mean, they couldn't even get like three forwards on the field while San Jose was up a man. So in San Jose, never even practiced being down a man. They couldn't even get another forward onto the field when San Jose was down a man and they were up a man. And then San Jose, in turn, had never practiced being down a man before the season. So everything they were going on, they were just dropping back and absorbing pressure and letting the defenders play with the ball there instead of giving it to the few attacking players. And we've seen it. They've got like eight defensive midfielders on the roster. I mean, it's just kind of, it's interesting and it's kind of ridiculous in terms of the roster construction. And if they're not going to pour hard money into it, like you would see in Atlanta United or an LAFC pour tons of dollars into their roster and scouting externally from MLS, you know, to load up their roster with a bunch of USL, MLS and draft picks and a few picks from abroad just isn't going to cut it in MLS. And I just don't know, you know, this talk about creating a culture around the team and doing all that we saw from Birding in the press conference today, I just think it's kind of laughable because it takes time to establish a culture. And when you've only had this roster operating since the middle of March, even by the time they got Kenny Saif and they got Brian, the Tico Conte, the midfielder, the Costa Rican midfield that they picked up from Pedro, his name's escaping me, but by the time they get some of these key players involved, Fernando Wadi gets in trouble and all this stuff. By the time they get all those guys involved, it's mid March. And so you're going to ask, a head coach of a team that is newly brought together in a brand new place to have established a culture 10 games into a season. I just think you're kind of kidding yourself. I understand, like, there's this odd balance in MLS of coaches being given too much time and not given enough. Arguably, Anthony Hudson was given too much time. If you're going to cut him this early in the season, you might as well have cut him in the offseason and given a new coach a chance to start a whole season with a roster. You look at the San Jose Earthquakes. They did it about the right time. They cut it. They hired Almeida. They finished out the season given a full offseason and preseason with the team. Koch, you know, this is the only time we've seen expansion teams fire their head coaches, especially after a year, or not even within a year. You know, Jason Kreis is the only one that you can think of, and that's just what happens when Manchester City is making all your soccer decisions. And so far, he doesn't have the greatest track record in MLS. Now, outside of Real Salt Lake, you look at him where he's gone to New York City and Orlando and pretty much fallen flat on his face in both places. So, you know, there's that much to be said for his actual coaching and stuff like that. But, you know, you look at Koch, I mean, I get not all coaches can make that jump. Adrian Heath is the only one who seems to be navigating it, but Minnesota have given him 3 years in charge of their team to grow and build something and have slowly built and brought the roster along the way. And now they look like a playoff team. They've invested a lot of money into some attackers, some fine midfielders and defenders as well. So Minnesota United look good because they gave Adrian Heath some time. This is something that Peter Vermees was even saying about Frank DeBoer leading into it and kind of pleading with the Atlanta fans to just have some patience, give it time. When you have a manager that is brand new and it's trying to implement ideas, especially to a roster that is brand spanking new and never played with each other, it's going to take a lot of time for the ideas and for the things that they want to do to hold true and to stick. So, I think if you're looking for someone to create a culture, you can't fire him 11 games into his first season with a roster that has literally played 11 games into each other. So I think there's some hypocritical things by the FC Cincinnati front office. I don't think it sends a good message to the fan base right away, because it shows that they're trying to expect more than arguably most expansion teams will ever give any fan base in this regular season and in their first inaugural year. And I think that's kind of a dangerous precedent for them to set, especially for people who don't have a good history of, or even a long history of making soccer related decisions for a soccer team.
But Dan, I don't want to have to be patient. I want my team to win every game 5-0 like I do on the easiest setting on FIFA. I agree with what you say in principle in the big picture, Dan. I guess the only thing that I really have to add, I don't want to exclusive. Colorado Rapids and FC Cincinnati are still in very different places in terms of a number of different aspects as franchises, and certainly what they're aspiring to be and what the hopes for this season was compared to, you know, the next couple of seasons. But I think the one parallel you absolutely have right now is a general manager asserting their authority, certainly casting some aspect of the blame of what's gone on with the team on the manager rather than accepting and, you know, at least publicly committing belief and confidence in the roster that they have right now. And Porik Smith saying that, you know, that right now the Rapids are, you know, better than the sum, or aren't playing right now better than the sum of their parts, and by talent he does not see, you know, a wooden spoon contender. And I saw the exact same thing from everybody, front office, ownership, players from FC Cincinnati today. So I guess at this point now, I guess the one parallel is like FC Cincinnati and whatever they thought was or wasn't going wrong and how much it was or wasn't Alan Koch's fault, you can't blame him going forward with any single game or in how ultimately this season goes forward. And where I have concern, Dan, is something that I said even going back to the offseason and when we had our season preview of Cincinnati still has a lot of very, very inconsistent attackers. Kukure Mane's greatest value for much of his time in Vancouver was potential that was yet to be tapped. You look at the concerns with Fernando Adi's age and his gradual reduction in production over the number of years that ultimately ended his time in Portland. Obviously had some issues off the field that we don't need to rehash on this podcast, you know, that presumably now have been resolved. And look, they've got Darren Maddox, who, yeah, like, does, you know, is very, very competitive when he feels that he's been slighted, but at the same time he keeps getting slighted because he's a really inconsistent player. I see a lot of MLS veterans, MLS caliber talent that is very, very inconsistent. You know, obviously there's the issues with them having 10 defensive midfielders that they don't really need. And really this defense is one Kendall Waston injury away from being not very good or sound in the air or in terms of just their shape and everything. So I still have my doubts about this roster as it's constructed from a talent perspective. I commend FC Cincinnati for holding themselves to the level of standard to where the start like this over the course of 10 games is not acceptable for what they want to achieve. At the same time, given the level of spending, where they've spent the money, the players that they brought in, and just the collective whole that they have, and maybe some of their expectations given how well it succeeded in USL, now at this point they can't blame Alan Koch, and ultimately if there are failures, then I think they need to look further internally, and maybe some of that blame pie should be going to them and not their now no longer head coach. Speaking of other beef, Dan, let's move on to other news. Kai Kamara cannot avoid starting a rant or beef with somebody on Instagram and then posting it to Twitter. He came out with a video, I want to say on Monday now. Maybe it was yesterday. Maybe it was on Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday, with some comments off of an article from Doug McIntyre in the Kansas City Star. Correct, Dan?
Sam McDowell in the Kansas
City Star. From the Kansas City Star. The article was part of a bigger picture of a conversation or a talk rather that Peter Vermees gave on a number of aspects of coaching and spanning the years in terms of his time with Sporting Kansas City. And there was a little comment in there about Kai Kamara going on loan to Middlesbrough and Norwich City. I can't remember which came first, and then coming back to Kansas City, and then Peter Vermees saying that Kai had changed in some aspect and he was no longer about the team, and that ultimately planted seeds to where Sporting Kansas City, in from my perspective, and feel free to disagree with me, not in bad blood, but said that Kai Kamara wasn't going to be a part of the team going forward, and ultimately chose to depart on from him and go pursue other offensive options. and both of them since then have had a certain level of success. This kind of coupling with past history for Kai in terms of having beef and leaving some of his clubs with either individuals or large groups of the club with a bad taste in their mouth. Certainly the way things ended for him in Columbus was tumultuous. Didn't leave on the best of terms in terms of how he left New England Revolution. Some of the people who I've spoken to in the general sense that I've gotten, his time in Vancouver ended just because of Robo was leaving as head coach, and obviously Mark Dos Santos wanted to take the club in a different direction. So that wasn't a divorce so much as a, we both want something and we want something that's different. Like, we'll go about our ways in peace. You know, obviously Vancouver got something, via, the expansion draft trade and everything. And then obviously Colorado and Kai got something in them needing a striker and him being the one good thing the Rapids have going for them right now. Dan, to my knowledge, weren't there when Kai Kamara was there, but you interact with a lot of people around Sporting Kansas City. You have a sense of the history, and certainly with the people involved, and certainly you've rubbed elbows with Doug on a few different occasions. Your take on the situation, whether or not it's relevant, you know, are we bringing to light something that we already knew? And, you know, why is Kai starting a beef when he's got way bigger issues to focus on at Dick's Sporting Goods Park right now?
Yeah, here's my thing on this. I mean, I'll say this. I won't speak for Sam, just because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't need that from me. Dave issued their response to it. I believe Kai, the quote in question, Kai, went out, and he kind of went after, Sam for, Sam provided backup that the quote was 100% accurate. Played the video. I know Kai wanted greater context because it never mentioned Kai. Specifically in the audio clip that Sam posted on Twitter.
But it did say came back from Norwich City, and there's no other Sporting player who's been on loan in Norwich City and then come back.
Exactly. So, I mean, I know Kai is kind of at the point of like, well, he never said my name, but I mean, you know who he's talking about. So, in the article, it even says, I believe it says that Peter didn't even mention Kai's name specifically, but if you know anything about the team, you know what happened there. So, that Kai was the only one who went to Norwich City. So, I mean, that's all I'll really say on it. I don't think, at least on the matter specifically, just because I think it's all really silly, and a silly thing for Kai to kind of poke at and poke the bear at, especially once Sam has kind of backed himself up here. Peter, I think the interesting thing is that Peter publicly, you know, said that the quote, from him that he made, not that Sam took the quote out of context, but the quote itself was out of context in the bigger picture of what he was trying to talk about and illustrate. He went and did an interview with Nate Bucati before, the game against, Atlanta. I just have to say, I mean, I really think the whole thing is just kind of silly at this point. And like you said, Kai's got bigger problems to deal with on his current team, and to try and go back and publicly rehash and, you know, call out and defame people, I think is just a little bit much. I don't think any, you know, from his own history with the way things ended in Columbus, and just kind of the general attitude that that he had, maybe not now, but a lot earlier in his career, it was pretty apparent in places like San Jose and places in Houston. And then in, eventually with Sporting Kansas City when he came back from Norwich and all that stuff. So, you look at all those things there, like you said, that may not be Kai now. He may have changed as he got older, but, maybe back then it was. And so I just think it's very silly to get wrapped up in something that was such a small part of a 65-minute conversation that Peter Vermees was having with these people at Rockhurst University out here. But like you said, I think Kai's got bigger problems to worry about. I mean, it's just silly considering where the team is at to kind of go off and get involved in something like this. I'm not going to like question his focus or anything like that, but I think it's fair if that does draw questions about focus and all that kind of stuff. I'm not there. I don't have a chance to see Kai in and out or week in, week out. And I didn't have a chance to cover him here. But at the same time, if you're a Rapid supporter, I would be questioning probably whether or not his full focus is with this right now, with the team right now, in a time where they need a lot of people focused and brought in if they're going to try and turn this thing around.
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. You know, I guess just I'll address briefly, you know, the stuff going on in Colorado. You know, as I've said, you know, with I haven't noticed anything that you would relate to some of either hit what ultimately led to his departure with Kansas City. Certainly nothing close to, you know, the borderline locker room feud he had with Pipe Higuain and ultimately his final year in Columbus Crew. For at least in my interaction with everyone who I've spoken to and even my sourcing and everything, he's been nothing but a consummate professional. He's been focused on everything. He stood up and he's taken responsibility for the current run of form that Colorado's on, and that's, you can say more about him doing that than certainly a Tim Howard and pretty much every single defender on the Colorado Rapids right now, basically coming out and saying, you know, I go out and I get two goals and it's not enough. I guess I need to go out there with a hat trick. So he's been focused. He's been one of the few bright spots for Colorado. If this is him doing something to try and fire himself up to go from being, you know, two goals and maybe drawing a penalty a game in a good game to actually getting a hat trick. Kai, I appreciate where your heart is at. I think your intentions may be good, but you're probably going about it in a way that's theatrical and an unnecessary expenditure of energy. And I mean, you know, particularly just like starting a fight with a member of the press who doesn't even cover the team anymore. And again, like you said, Dan, was 1 7-second clip in the greater part of, you know, a 65-minute interview. You know, this is, I would make this akin to, you know, two people were dating, they had a mutual group of friends, they broke up, one of them posted something on Facebook about their relationship and how it ended. It was generally something that was considered consensus, well-known knowledge, or if it wasn't knowledge, it was accepted by everybody. And everybody back 5 years ago when you broke up already formulated their opinion about it. So if you liked, you know, let's say, for example, you have, you know, let's say Sally and Bobby, for example, and then Bobby did something and then that caused Sally to break up with him. Like, if you were taking Sally's side on this, your opinion probably hasn't changed. If you took Bobby's perspective on it or side on it, it probably wasn't changing. Like, Kai went up on a hill and said, I'm gonna die on this hill. You know, Kansas City Star, fight me over this thing. And everybody's looking at him like, Kai, nobody wants this hill anymore. Nobody's cared about this hill. Like, this hill hasn't mattered, and we've all accepted the history that happened on this hill 5 years ago. Why are you having this fight? And so, I don't, like, Kai is the bear, and he's poking himself, if that makes any sense, Dan. And now he's coming after people for poking himself. So, we've talked about this way too much about I would almost call this a nothing fight. I don't know if you're a Dan Cook stand-up fan, Dan, but he has a lot of his stuff I don't particularly care for, but he has this really good spiel about a nothing fight between a couple in the freezer section of a grocery store that I'm sure you would find absolutely hilarious. I'll send this to you afterwards. But in any case, let's move on. One more big topic that we want to talk about, Dan. Last week we talked about the Philadelphia Union and them being top of the Eastern Conference and doing really well despite a number of things that weren't really working for them. And I feel like we owe Houston Dynamo fans who are listening to this a little bit, not owe them crow, owe them a little, we owe them an apology or an acknowledgement that we haven't talked about them as much when I think they're absolutely deserving. You know, Philly got a big 6-1 win. Or I think it was 6-0 over, I don't remember who they played on. Was it New England? Over New England on Saturday. And Houston Dynamo got a very comprehensive victory over FC Dallas. You know, that last call may be a little bit questionable, but for 85 minutes, I thought they were definitely the better team. Mauro Minotas is scoring goals for absolute fun. Albert Elise is pwning noobs, and, you know, every single week seems to be upping the expected transfer fee offer for him in the summer. Wilmer Cabrera is doing this with a very, very small budget. He is doing this with a lot of new pieces, a lot of young pieces on the defensive side of the ball, and with the exact same offensive core, but now they're playing much more consistently. And then they're doing it both at home and on the road. Dan, your thoughts on Forever Orange appearing to be, at least for now, forever really good?
Yeah, I love this Houston Dynamo team. They're one of my favorite to watch. Memo Rodriguez in the midfield, or a young talent, a homegrown talent that they have there, has been a revelation of them for the revelation for them in the midfield. They've done a good job shoring up their back line enough that front line last year was dangerous. They could score 2-3 goals a game if they wanted. Albert Delis is a menace and creates a whole lot. You have Mara Minotas, who is a expert finisher, and then they play the transition game really well. They can kind of possess you and move the ball around and pick you apart that way. They can also sit back and absorb some pressure and hammer you on the counter. And I think last year we saw a team that couldn't do that. They couldn't do that second part, which made them so good the year before and gave them a run into the Western Conference Finals against Seattle. So, you know, in 2017, they made that run. 2018, they fall off because their back line had issues. AJ De La Garza was out. You see now AJ De La Garza healthy. You see their back line being successful. They made an addition to center back Bastruna. They have a defensive midfielder grouping in there. And then Memo Rodriguez and Tomas Martinez both have been excellent playmakers in the midfield for them. And Mara Minotas just continues to grow and grow and grow as a goal scorer and a player in this league. If you don't remember, last year, with Mara Minotas, they were struggling, and they all of a sudden they go and get Ronaldo Pena, a young designated player forward, who has now you haven't heard of him, you haven't done a whole lot, because Mara Minotas has stepped up his game and has been one of the best, if not one of the best in the box finisher within the league. He's done a fantastic job of finding the space, getting the ball to his feet, and scoring goals. You know, it was no secret this Dynamo team was going to score goals and be electric in the attack. But what they've been able to do defensively and shoring it up for the most part was really impressive. And I know, you know, FC Dallas rivalry games, I think all I kind of tend to take like the entire like thought about each team going into said rivalry game and throw it out the window, because rivalry games are just different and they kind of bring out difference, a whole lot of difference in teams. You know, this week you've got Orlando City, Atlanta United. I'm still not counting out Orlando City, even though they've never won that match. You have Rocky Mountain Cup. Colorado has not won a game this season, and it would not surprise me if they came out and somehow won this game 3-0.
That would surprise me, Dan.
I don't know. I'm just saying rivalry games have this sense, have this feeling about them that both teams absolutely get up for them. And very rarely is it an absolute blowout. And a lot of times they tend to be more tightly contested games. There's a lot more pressure on every single decision. I think that's kind of what happened with the, you know, letting the lead slip against FC Dallas. But this is a very good Houston Dynamo team, and a team that pretty much everybody in the Western Conference should be worried about, because they have the ability, you know, to break you down and score in a variety of ways and control a game in a variety of ways. And even if they may not be controlling the possession and the attacking flow of the game, they are still comfortable doing that. And I think that's what makes them such a dangerous team in the Western Conference.
Well said, Dan. I think simply that they went out either from last season to this season, they've improved in their areas, you know, 5-10%. That's just been enough for them to be, you know, like a playoff bubble team to a very, very good team, a team that on their day, you know, can compete with anybody in MLS. You know, you see a little bit of sharpening of, you know, certainly their offensive weapons. You know, I think, you know, Albert Elise, I feel like, was the most consistent of that group of four that they had, but, you know, he's playing on another level that we haven't really seen from him in MLS. And then obviously the Memo Rodriguez's, and the Romeo Kyoto's are also playing really well. That group has just been, they're at the same level that they were at before. They're just been a little bit more consistent. And then they've gone out and sort of every single area that they had issues with defensively, they just got in pieces and they've just made that work. They took their biggest weakness, and that was their biggest area that they addressed in the offseason. I absolutely love Struna every single game that I've seen from him. I think he's been a breath of fresh air for them. Joe Willis is still pretty solid at the back, and you certainly see that second year back from the ACL tear and the rehab that AJ De La Garza is. Maybe, you know, mostly because of his age, maybe not as good as he was at his peak with the LA Galaxy, but still a very good and defensively sound right back. I think my big concern for Houston, as I've been saying all year, is the summer is going to come up, the European transfer window is going to open, and then what are they doing without release? And then what are they also doing? I would even throw in Mauro Minotas at this point, just because, you know, I don't care what league it's in. If it's a league where somebody's played in it and then gone to Europe and had some level of success, and then you talk about getting 20 goals in a previous season, and he could have, you know, 10 or maybe even 15 potentially by the time, you know, that summer transfer window, at some point in that summer transfer, or maybe 15 towards the end of that window, you know, I mean, he had the brace on Saturday and he was absolutely fantastic. I think the Houston Dynamo are going to be fielding offers for both of those players. I think my question is then, how much do they get for them? How much of that is net profit? And then how quickly can they invest that into the team? And then how quickly can those players get in, get fit, and then be immediately impactful for the team this season? That series of questions is where I have doubt, or where I have pretty large error bars in terms of what the 2019 Houston Dynamo season is going to look like, particularly in the back half, and certainly by the time we get to the playoffs. If you told me right now that both of those guys are staying, then I think this is a team that will host a home playoff game in the 2019 MLS Cup playoffs, and this is a team that, particularly on the road where they're going to be able to sit back and defend, is going to be a threat for the Seattle Sounders of the world, for the LA Galaxies of the world, for the LAFCs of the Western Conference. But I just, there's too much other stuff going on that I want to see that European window close and that secondary transfer window for MLS close before I say that Houston Dynamo are absolutely contender in the Western Conference, just because I don't know if they hold on to those two guys. I mean, you know, if somebody comes in and offers you $10 million for a club with Houston's level of investment, I don't know how you say no and don't just reinvest that into, you know, the first team in the academy and other upgrades where, you know, you're a team that could use a pretty substantial chunk of change like that. That does it for us, Dan, as far as the major things we wanted to talk about tonight. Most of that, listeners, is due to me being in the middle of nowhere, Ontario, and hotel Wi-Fi being extremely inconsistent, but it's been good for the almost 40 minutes that we've been recording now. So, Dan, we'll throw to you for last words. Where can people find you on Twitter? Do you have any last words? And just to complete pick'ems for the sake of completeness, pick one game this weekend and then just give me the score line that you have for that game. Any game this weekend in MLS.
All right. So so you can follow me on Twitter at SperryDarian94. Last words, got a couple things. One, watch the US Open Cup these next couple of weeks here. As soon as we're done recording this, I'm turning over to watch my hometown Academica SC play in their play on ESPN Plus at a field that I used to train at. I've already saw some of the things. They're kind of showing all the farm life because it's just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Super cool experience out there. So I'm watching that. Watch the US Open Cup this week. They've got there's a lot of really cool small clubs and small towns that are going to get a whole lot of national airtime. So there's going to be a lot of cool stories if you are into that. Second off, interesting move, that I saw from the Chicago Fire. Got a 33-year-old goalkeeper, who spent most of his career in Germany, if not all of it, has never played inside the United States, and he will not be an international player because he was born in Virginia. This goalkeeper has 90 something clean sheets and a little over 300 career appearances in the second and third divisions in Germany. They signed him. It's one of five goalkeepers on the Chicago Fire roster. Weird. Interesting, but a whole lot of eyebrow raising. But looks like the Chicago Fire are attempting to shore up their back line, as they have also made some moves to kind of shore up their attack with Nico Gaitán, Frankowski, and a few other guys that they picked up earlier in the season, now kind of shoring up their back line. We'll see if the Chicago Fire turn into an interesting team in the Eastern Conference. But that's it for me. One game to pick a score line. Well, let's go Toronto FC in Philadelphia in what is probably my favorite matchup of the weekend. I'm going to say Toronto FC put a damper on the Philadelphia Union party. Toronto FC wins this one 3-1 thanks to the uber talent of Alejandro Pozuelo and the finishing that is around him. So that's that. I will give a shout out. Thanks to our sponsor, Golden Gold Press, the best choice for you to get custom shirts, hats, mugs, and other items for just yourself or your organization. Check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at goldengoalpress.com. So thanks to our sponsor, Golden Goal Press, and that'll do it for me this week.
Great stuff, Dan. I'll throw in one more pick 'em for you. Sharks Avalanche, game 7 at the Tank tomorrow night. Who you got?
Oh boy, I'm gonna take I'll take the Sharks in that one. I'll say it's 4-2.
Oh man, okay. Is the fourth one an empty netter?
Yes.
Alrighty, okay. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Check us out at LastWordOnSoccer.com and then LastWord at LastWordSC across all social media platforms. Thank you to our other sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team, possibly US Open Cup themed, at roughneckscarves.com. The game that I'll pick for this weekend, Dan, I'll of course look at the Rocky Mountain, let's not do Rocky Mountain Cup. Let's look at, I don't know if it has a name yet, but Atlanta, Orlando, I'll say that Orlando gets their first win in MLS competition, against the Five Stripes, and I'll say it'll be 2-1, to Orlando. I'll say it's Joseph Martinez, Nani, and Dom Dwyer on the three goals for their respective teams. I'll throw in the fire also for my last word, Dan, them picking up Francisco Calvo, who is kind of on the outs, interestingly, just because, you know, he just hasn't really worked as the left back in a four-man back line, and I don't, like, Adrian Heath just isn't going with the three-man back line anymore, so I'm subtly suspicious that Veljko Panovic over at Chicago isn't going to go with like three center backs and then wing backs and just go like 5-3-2 and just like deep bunker and counter and then just try and like through balls all like get the ball out wide to the fullbacks and then get that ball on the foot of Alexander Katai and then Nico Gaitán and then just through balls trying to cut the gaps to CJ Sapong and Nemanja Nikolic all day. And I think Francisco Calvo is perfectly fit for it. So I think it's a win-win for both teams and the player as well. I guess maybe it's not a win for Calvo in the sense that he's going from, I think, a good team that's going to compete for the playoffs to a team that I think isn't going to compete for the playoffs. And fantastic new MLS-specific stadium that was selling out every day to, you know, having to go exist in Bridgeview is a pretty miserable existence. But I'm curious to see what this experiment looks like, given also what you were saying about the Chicago Fire. Weird things going on in Chicago. But I mean, it's something that I want to watch in the same sense that, like, watching, oh, I don't want to disparage anybody, but like one of those weird indie films that like doesn't have a plot or anything, or, you know, like going to watch like disaster movie or like a really, really horrible comedy that you're watching because it's bad and you're kind of hate watching it, but also enjoying it. That's how I think I'm going to feel about the Chicago Fire. And Francisco Calvo is just going to stroke those literal and metaphorical flames. All right. That does it for us, folks. Enjoy your midweek MLS that you'll be getting on Wednesday this week. Certainly enjoy the first round proper of the US Open Cup. We'll be back to our regular programming and reliable internet connections next week.